The TLDR on Morpheus is it's basically a platform building you personal AI. And I really think, I believe personal AI is how we achieve freedom in the future.
Welcome to the ATX DAO podcast, the hub for exploring the forefront of blockchain technology and Austin's Web3 community. Your hosts, Nick, Mason, Luke, and Ash, connect you with innovators within ATX DAO and beyond as we venture into the world of decentralized technology. So crack open a beer and join us for a front row seat to learn about the innovations and trends shaping our digital future. This is the ATX DAO podcast. Welcome to the ATX DAO podcast. We are very excited today to welcome a special guest, second time on the show, David Johnson from the Morpheus organization. David, welcome to the show.
It's good to be here. Proud to be an open source contributor to Morpheus, along with 200 others.
I think David is the first repeat guest we've ever had on ATX DAO.
Yes.
Really?
Testament to how much of a fan we are of him and the mission that he's progressing over at Morpheus. And I think you guys have made some pretty strong progress since the first episode. So excited to catch up. If anyone hasn't listened to the first episode with David Johnston, definitely recommend going back to check that out. It was an awesome episode. It's going to set the stage for a lot of the stuff that we're going to talk about today. And we want to try to minimize the amount of repetition so we're not just doing a repeat episode. So maybe on that note, let's kick it off with just a quick introduction about you. If people want the full introduction, they can go back and listen to the first episode. But what's your elevator introduction for yourself, David?
So been in crypto since 2012. I am a freedom maximalist. And I think the way we achieve that in the world is open source and decentralization. Like the TLDR on Morpheus is, it's basically a platform building you personal AI. And I really think, I believe personal AI is how we achieve freedom in the future, right? That's how we get there, is you have to have an AI that's connected to your data. It's owned by you. It only follows your prompts. It's not owned by some company or government, right? That's the way forward, right? For the same reason you want a personal phone and you want a personal computer, you're going to want a personal AI, right? And so Morpheus is an open source project that popped into existence last September. And yeah, we talked about it on your last show. And it's just been insane to see the response from the community. Over 100,000 staked ETH. That's like $350 million of ETH has flowed in since that show. Yeah, to support decentralized AI and this development of an open source network for smart agents and giving people a personal AI. So yeah, it's been a wild few months, and I'm glad to be back and kind of talk about what's happened since.
Yeah, it has been wild. So I remember that very first day. So full disclosure, listeners, I do am one of those folks that is staking ETH for Morpheus. But that first day, it was, you know, a smaller group. I got a lot bigger piece of the pie on that first day. And now I got a little bit smaller piece of that pie. But it's just been awesome to see how much attention it's gotten and how many people believe in the work.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the refresher, like what's really interesting about Morpheus is there's no company. Right. There's no formal organization. There's no DAO. There's no foundation. It's entirely decentralized and just been this movement where people are like, we got to build decentralized AI. We got to do it right now before these regulations they've proposed go into effect. Like, we're not going to miss this opportunity. Right. And so just to see like the rallying cry from Eric Voorhees and a bunch of the other OGs who have jumped in to the Morpheus projects and started building different pieces of it has been really inspiring. I honestly haven't felt this kind of energy since like the Ethereum days of just like, you know, this is important. We need to all pull together and build something that everybody can use, but it's not owned by some company. It's not owned by any one protocol. It's just neutral platform for anybody to build on, which I think is really cool.
And clearly you're not the only one. So amazing to see how much progress y'all have made since the first call. There's nothing like a deadline to get the job done, right? And this is a pretty scary freaking deadline. There's no extensions here. So let's talk a little bit about that. Just a refresher on what is this regulation coming up? When does it take place? What's going to change when this goes into effect?
So the executive order last October, the real quick summary is it's imposing all these random limits on what you can do on your own computer, what people can do in data centers. They're going to introduce KYC and all this friction if you want to use a US data center. So if you enjoyed KYC for your money, welcome to KYC for your computer, right? It's crazy stuff like that. And so the craziest one is in July, the Commerce Department will decide if open source weights constitute dual use weapons, right? And we're like T minus like 90 days until they make that determination. People told me last year, oh, they'll never do that. They opened a comment period. They closed a comment period. They're writing the rules right now. Like, they are implementing all these crazy things from the executive order. And what this really is regulatory capture, right? Google and Microsoft, they wrote these rules. You can see from the numbers they picked, they grandfathered themselves in for all their old models. And what they're trying to do is prevent other startups from disrupting, you know, sort of the control they have over AI. And so, you know, this reminds me so much of the early days of Bitcoin. The way that, you know, you remove yourself from that system is you create an entirely different framework, right? You have to have one where there is no company, right, to collect KYC. There is no centralized data center, right? You can decentralize all the compute for the AI inference, right? There is no custodian, right, holding your information or holding it on your behalf. Like, this is your personal AI. And that has worked really well in Web3, right, where you draw the line and say, all right, we're just going to rip out all the middlemen and the custodians, and it's going to be straight up like you holding your keys to your wallet, right? And that's where we have to get to with AI. And so it's been so cool to sort of see the communities come together, like the AI and the crypto community, and the Web3 people will be like, hey, we've been through this, you know, here's what you got to do, right, to build something that's not going to be affected by all these crazy rules. And since we talked, I guess California's introduced a bill that's even crazier. It's like illegal for devs to write certain software if it's related to AI. There's going to be a regulatory agency for AI. You need permission from all this, right? So also, I guess the other update is Homeland Security, which you'll, as a centralized US company, you'll need a permission and license from Homeland Security. And guess who's on the committee to set all the licenses? It's Microsoft and Google and all the guys that paid the lobbying dollars last year, right? They're now the ones in charge of sprinkling the holy water. And Elon didn't get on that list. And Zuckerberg didn't get on the list. Nobody doing open source got on that list, right? For some reason, the governor of Maryland was important. The Seattle mayor was important. Like, all these political appointees and a bunch of corporates that paid for it, but none of the open source people, right? And so, like, whatever. They can have their little committee. Let's build a system that doesn't care and in which none of those rules apply. Because if you look at the rules, they're all written around companies, right? The presumption is it's a company training the models and building the software. It's a company running it. They're running it for people. But we don't need any of that, right? The mm-hmm. models have gotten so good that you can run it on your own hardware, right? So you can have a local version. You can run it in a decentralized network that's entirely peer-to-peer. Like, that's what we have to get to. But yeah, there's not a lot of time. Like, this is a very short runway. And so it's been amazing to see people pull together and kind of build something that's like, no, we're not this time. We're just gonna go straight to the conclusion, full decentralized, and Morpheus is how we're doing that.
Open source developers for the win. It's the best chance we have to fight back against the state. And wow, yeah. I love the way that you described it. It's like, we need these permissionless protocols. We don't need companies. And it's just like, like you said, it's the same war that we've been fighting in crypto with money for years. It's the same war that fills in and fraught with encryption and PGP. And now they're coming for compute, for data. And just like you said, the best chance we have is to create a permissionless network that's unstoppable and is built on open source code, just like these protocols, sure. Like Bitcoin, like PGP. So what does Morpheus need to have done by the time these regulations come into effect? I think you said about 90 days in July. Sure. What are you guys like aiming to get done and racing to get done before that happens?
Well, I mean, it's just been incredible. Like, there's all these different people, like, you know, again, there's no central organization. So people have popped up and said, hey, I'll write the smart contracts, right? Or I'll build the local node, or I'll build the decentralized compute. Like, you know, Ryan Condron out of Lumerin was like, hey, I've spent 3 years building a decentralized compute network. Let's take what we did for that on hash power and do it for inference, right? Do it for AI. And so they already had like 90% of the contracts and they were already ready for Arbitrum, which is what the Morpheus token is deploying on to start. Like, and so people just like, hey, I've got open source, I'll put it in, let's go, right? And so the expectation is probably the decentralized compute network will go into testnet next month. And so you're talking potentially live in June, right? Pending basically the audits, almost all the contracts are finished. And so, you know, after you have decentralized compute, then it's like, okay, anybody can deploy a smart agent, a model, they can run compute on the network. But already today, you can download a Morpheus full node, and it'll put a large language model on your personal laptop, and you can connect it to your MetaMask, and you can start sending Ethereum. You can, you know, check your balance, all that kind of basic stuff. And people are just building all these upgrades and basically putting all the primitives in, like, oh, I want to do swaps, or I want to do sends, or I want to do whatever. And so you'll have the option of running this locally. If you want to run it locally, great. There's no cost. It's, you know, it's on your own machine. And it doesn't even need an internet connection until you broadcast the transaction, right? And so that information isn't going to anybody else. And then as soon as the network goes live, then you'll have like real horsepower, because people with big GPUs that want to get paid for it, you know, can earn the Morpheus token, right? 24% of the emissions go to people providing compute. And so that's huge, is now you've got all the world's GPUs competing to provide all those tools and that access to anybody if they don't like have their own GPU, you know, to make images or videos or all the cool stuff that's coming out. And so I'm pretty optimistic that it's going to hit the timeline, right? I mean, it's already there on the local side, and I think it's going to be there in May, June when it comes to all like the decentralized aspects. So it's been going on this journey from, you know, the capital going live to the code to the compute. The last piece will be people deploying smart agents that they build on Morpheus, because that's the whole idea, right? Is, you know, anybody can deploy something permissionlessly on Morpheus, just the way you can put a smart contract permissionlessly onto Ethereum, right? You don't need to ask anybody's permission or check in with the foundation to deploy a smart contract. It's the same with the smart agent on Morpheus, right? Morpheus is just providing the platform. It's just giving people the tools, right? And then let them go crazy, right? Invent anything you want to invent and deploy it. The other big thing is, like, clearly this fair launch model where you take staked ETH and donate just the yield has hit a chord, right? And so I put up a presentation at ETH Denver and it's like, hey guys, we should generalize this model, right? Call it More 20. You know, this will be a standard and a platform where anybody who wants to run a fair launch can do so, right? And it won't take them 6 months of smart contract development. They can just use all the Morpheus smart contracts and dashboards and audits. Like, Morpheus has been audited, I think, 6 times now, right? And is securing $300-400 million. Like, the idea, like, I don't even know why somebody hasn't done it before, but being able to reuse these smart contracts for anybody that wants to launch a fair launch, you know, I think is a really cool way of going forward, because clearly it was attractive. Like, I'm holding my ETH anyway. I might as well point the yield at a cool project I want to support, right? And see more public goods, more open source built in the world. Like, great. Like, let's give everybody that tool set. And so this whole More 20 idea has really caught on. There's a lot of talk of it at the last decentralized AI summit. And, you know, I think that's the direction people are headed, is like, okay, let's use this primitive, let's use this infrastructure to build something sustainable, because it really did sort of reinvent the whole model, right? You don't need to do a token sale and shove it into a centralized, you know, treasury, and, you know, a committee decides who gets that money or something like that. You can just make it entirely decentralized, and the yield keeps going into the protocol on liquidity. And so this isn't a one-time event, right? After May 8th, things are going to keep going. You're going to keep being able to earn more for your staked ETH for the next 16 years, right, on the supply curve, right? So the term that's been invented for this now is automated recurring revenue, or automated recurring rewards, right, ARR. And think about that as a primitive. Like, no, I just don't want to do a one-time thing. Like, this is a long-term project that we want to be sustainable. Let's use automated recurring revenue to support it, right? To support the open source developers and the people providing all the pieces. So Yeah, there's been so much going on since the last interviews. It's been wild to see.
I was going to say, yeah, I think it's just such a cool model to have there. I mean, it's one of the things that really appealed to me about it where, I mean, you, like you said, you're going to hold the ETH anyway. You might as well point it to something that you believe in. And I like the idea of it being kind of a longer term commitment as well, because it really shows the people that believe in the project. I think tons of new projects are going to be interested in using it. So I think it's great that y'all are planning to share that and make it available for more, because I think it's a great model for launch.
Yeah. And we're talking like imminently. The contracts, I think they'll be ready in the next couple of weeks. And then you'll probably see the dashboards. I know open source developers are working on those right now, probably sometime in June. So people that want to use More20, there's already a page for it now on more.org. There's a dedicated More20 page, and people can sign up and see the links there on GitHub to, you know, go directly into the smart contracts and check it out. But yeah, it's just going to get easier and easier from like literally push a button on a dashboard, fill in what you want the project to be called, and there you go. Now you got a smart contract using More20. And the cool thing is it creates an expectation in the community that this is a safe process, right? Mm-hmm. If I know I do a More20 project, it can't be rugged because I still hold the Ethereum. I can withdraw the Ethereum whenever I want, right? And the yield isn't even going into a treasury. It's going into an automated market maker, and it becomes protocol and liquidity. Right. So even that is giving more liquidity and scarcity in the token. Right. And so I'm removing some trusted party that has to hold a bunch of funds, and instead just using the staking rewards as my risk-free rate that I want to contribute, you know, that yield anyway. Cool. I'm going to hold the Ethereum in the next 5 years. I might as well put it to work. And now I'm getting this extra benefit. Right now I'm earning this extra token, but in a safe way where I'm not like gambling away my principal. I really still want to hold those ETH.
Yep. No, I think that's great. One kind of follow-up question on that. Is it something that can work on other chains as well that are EVM-based chains that have like a liquid stake coin, or is it really more geared toward Ethereum right now?
You know, Morpheus, as described in the paper, is totally agnostic, right? Chain agnostic, infrastructure agnostic. And so, you know, there's already been work on the smart contracts to add both layer zero and wormhole, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people use layer zero in the Ethereum context. Like I want to move a token to Arbitrum, or Base is growing really quickly, or, you know, I want to move it to, you know, Polygon or OP stack. Right. And so that gives you the flexibility. You're going to see Morpheus and More20 on all of those chains and layer twos. And then something like wormhole is already really popular over in Solana, right? So that gives you the ability to add Solana and other chains to the mix. And so, yeah, I think based on the smart contract development, like those improvements are already in audit right now. I think in the coming weeks, you're going to see this get deployed across a bunch of chains and a bunch of infrastructure. Because fortunately, like the pieces are all there now. Like layer zero and wormhole are pretty mature. You know, they secure tens of billions of dollars in value and have sent like a billion plus messages across their cryptographic rails. So yeah, it's no longer like you have to live on one chain, but a project can really go across ecosystems. And that's definitely the intention described in the white paper.
Awesome.
Super awesome. I'm a big fan of this fair launch method y'all have pioneered. And I think it's pretty amazing. Like not only have you built this incredible, very important platform for decentralizing AI, but you've also pioneered this really innovative, awesome, I don't want to call it a fundraising mechanism, but on one side for projects, it's a way to launch a token and build liquidity, which is one of the hardest things a lot of these token projects do, also one of the most expensive. And then on the other side, as a user or a degen, it's a way to basically, it sounds like both discover these projects as well as participate in the fair launch and basically buy their tokens. And as a degen myself, this really resonates with me because I've spent way too much time buying way too many altcoins. They always use my wallet at Shapeshift as a test wallet because I have so many coins that they're like, all right, if it works for William's wallet, it's going to work for us. And oftentimes apps will break because if you have more than 100 tokens, they just can't get they'll break the rate limit on the price request. So I love this because for me, kind of buying a token right now is really a shit show. Like you go to maybe Dex Screener to see what the new trending tokens are. Maybe you go to social media to try and like dig through all this noise to try and find what the hot new tokens are. And then to your point, like the safety isn't guaranteed. You kind of have to do diligence on each of these tokens to see what gremlins could be hiding in the contract. And Dex Screener kind of helps this. It'll show you like red flags and stuff. But still, it's very much a mess. And to your point, like a lot of these projects, there's not a great way for the average person to get kind of the same access that a whale or a VC could get, right? Oftentimes these VCs are getting better prices, or the whales just snipe the launch and get the best price. And it really seems like what you guys have developed here addresses a lot of those like those critical challenges that we've had with tokens to date in the space. We keep improving every cycle, and this very much seems like it could be the next evolution. And yeah, full disclosure, I'm actually working on a project called Nounspace that is planning to launch on the MOR20, because we were looking at how to launch our token. We saw the success that that Morpheus had, and we love everything about it. Again, it really solves some of those main challenges that a project launching a token has. So I wanted to ask, as someone who might be interested in participating in some of these fair launches, what types of projects are going to be deploying MOR20? Is it just AI projects? Is it any project that wants to launch a token? What about projects that like may have already raised some funding? Is it still possible for them to do a MOR20 launch?
Yeah, it's definitely still possible, because you know, you think about it as, you know, there are different reward buckets in the MOR20 context. For Morpheus, it was code, capital, compute, and community builders, right? The people actually building the smart agents and deploying them on the network. So that's sort of like everything the project needed to succeed. Is there's a bucket of rewards. So you could imagine, oh, your project's been around for a year. Some investors, you know, have funded development of some code. They want to open source it. They want to bring in the community. Great, put them in the coder reward, right? What they effectively did was, you know, sponsor the development of that open source code, right? And so it's between the investors and the coders, you know, how they split that bucket up. But ultimately, I don't think the capital or the community builders, the compute care how, you know, the code people, you know, ultimately created that open source and donated as long as they did. And the cool thing is, all right, they're still getting, you know, the same treatment in the sense that they're earning the tokens over time, right? That they're, you know, transparent in all of the ownership, you know, the fact that the capital isn't going to those people, like, the retail isn't buying out the VC. It's not going into some treasury and then getting paid out to somebody else. All the yield is going into the protocol and liquidity. And so everybody has access to that liquidity as it gets deeper and deeper, right? And just to expound on that a little bit, you know, so think about it this way, like staked ETH, let's say you're getting 3% annual staking rewards, right? That's a good bit of ETH, right? And it's a meaningful amount every day. And so those get placed every day into the Uniswap pool, right? It gets converted from staked ETH into wrapped ETH on Arbitrum, and then buys some of the tokens out of the pool and keeps the other half as an LP position in the WETH and the other half as the tokens that are bought, but it never comes out of the pool, right? So what you're doing is increasing the scarcity of the token over time in a way that's fair, transparent, predictable, recurring, right? This is what you want, right? And so you could imagine people with lots of different frameworks from lots of different industries. Like, it doesn't have to be AI. I mean, there's what, 100 billion globally of recurring software as a service. What are they all doing? Like, they're all doing monthly payments, right? You bring your credit card and you go through Stripe, right? And it pulls 10 bucks a month out of your account. Well, it's hard to do that in crypto, right? Because crypto is a push mechanism. It's not a pull mechanism, right? You know, maybe there's some way to basically pre-fund it, but I would like it a lot better if I like a service, cool. I'll stake $1,000 to it. And the yield is enough to pay my monthly cost. And it feels like it's just free because I didn't have to do anything. They get the yield. I keep my principal and I can withdraw it at any time and go use some other service, right? But that's a cool way to sort of recreate these recurring payments in a crypto native way, right? That is already done in Web 2. And so, you know, I fully expect this type of model will get expanded to USDT, USDC, Bitcoin, right? And ETH, right? Those are the four big things used as money, right? And a vendor, you know, building software they might even not know this originated as a decentralized AI project. It's just cool infrastructure that they can use for recurring payments. And all of a sudden, their Web3 users who want to stake some ETH have an easy way to pay that bill, right? So I think that opens a huge amount of opportunities for crypto projects, but also that's a way to convert the Web2 companies into Web3 companies, right? Because it gets rid of all the complexity for them, and they don't have to create this new thing, and they're losing retention because people aren't renewing every month. It just makes it easy, just the way it is. Super convenient to slash that credit card in Web2 world, and you kind of forget about it, right? And don't worry about it until you want to change the service. Like, we need to get to that same level with infrastructure for Web3. So that's the cool thing, is like, you can use this for almost anything.
It really does sound like it can apply to a huge range, pretty much any project that wants to launch a token. Yep. Even Web2, we just have to be careful that we don't blow their minds when we tell them about this. Super, super awesome description of everything and what you guys have built there. I can only imagine what my portfolio would look like if, instead of aping into these tokens and not have any recourse, I could have just like progressively given them my yield, still kept my ETH exposure basically, and then been able to pull out if at any point the project started going in a direction that I didn't want to support anymore. So really, really incredible innovations that you guys have here.
Well, I was just going to say, and the timing is kind of like perfect because Llama 3 just dropped. And it's the first open source model that's at like a ChatGPT-4 level of quality. So all of these use cases just opened up because the open source is now caught up and is starting to surpass the proprietary models. Right.
I was going to say as well, I hadn't even really thought about what you said about having it be a recurring payment. I think that's just a cool way. Like, if you have some kind of service in Web3 where you do need, like, it's a subscription model, that kind of thing, just say you need to stake X amount of staked ETH within our smart contract, and that's going to cover your use of this service for however long, like in perpetuity. Right. So I think that's just, even beyond launching a token, that's just another great use case for it. I love that.
And they don't have to spend 6 months in contracts and like just try to even get an auditor right now in the bull market. Like, their waiting periods are like 3 to 6 months. And so to instead use a tool off the shelf that does that right now, and especially as the community expands it to these other chains and then other yield types and other payment types, like, there's going to be a whole suite of tools that come out of this. And that's so cool because it's sort of like reinventing how we support open source, right? In a way that's a lot more aligned with all of our ethics, right? That, you know, I didn't get involved in Web3 to then create a centralized company, right? To do a bunch of stuff in Web3. All of a sudden, you know, the smart contracts have gotten to the point where we can do that with, you know, virtually everything we want to build. And that's the thing that attracted me to Morpheus, is sort of like that early OG spirit. Like, no, we're here for the revolution. We're here to fully decentralize things and make it free and open to people. But yeah, you know, just to go back to the Llama 3 stuff, you know, that's a huge breakthrough. Like, I can't emphasize enough how important that is, because let's say they do really restrict the models, like it looks like they're going to do come July. This is already a great basis to build off of. Like, pre-Llama 3, the open source tools were significantly behind, but now they've caught up to all of the proprietary tools. And, you know, that'll continue to race forward, and we'll see if they're talking about an even bigger version of Llama 3 releasing in the next few weeks. So that is huge, because, you know, it really sort of breaks us free with able to build tools that are not like, oh, but they're not as good. No, these are as good or better, right, than the proprietary stuff. And I think that's the future, right, is, you know, this is why, you know, Linux won. It's why Android won. It's just, here's the frictionless option anybody can use for free. That's always going to build, it's always going to beat the one where it's like, oh, but you got to pay $20 a month, right? And so I think that idea of free AI, not just free as in free beer, but free as in freedom, you know, to call back to, you know, the days of like Richard Stallman and the free software movement, right, is a lot of the same ideas.
Super cool. I got to give Mark some kudos for open sourcing Llama 3. That's pretty awesome of him to do that. So help me understand, as a non-developer, I was using Claude and ChatGPT a bunch today. So I'm paying those subscriptions. It sounds like I can download Llama 3 and maybe save $20 a month. Like, is the user experience, is it that easy? You just download it and run it on your computer and it feels just like ChatGPT or Claude?
Yeah, absolutely. And there are a ton of community members, like, you know, Eric has said publicly that he's building a permissionless ChatGPT. And I think he's going to release that next month, you know, and anybody that's holding, you know, Morpheus token is going to be able to effectively get his software and access to text and images, you know, for free is huge, right? Because, you know, Morpheus is providing all of the resources that somebody needs to build one of these projects, and just making it super easy. So for most users, they're going to have no idea that it's using decentralized AI in the back end. They just know it's fast, it's cheap, it's easy, and there's all these community sites that offer it. And so, yeah, I think for most people, they're not going to even have to download a full node any more than most people download a full Ethereum node or a full Bitcoin node. They just, you know, go on MetaMask. They go on, you know, Etherscan. It'll be effectively the same, right? People will be running front ends that use the APIs and talk to these back ends, you know, and for them, you know, I mean, Llama 3, the same quality as ChatGPT-4 is 10 times cheaper to use the API on your own machine or running in a data center than it is to pay their exorbitant AI API fees, right? So the difference is like night and day. Like maybe Oracle wants to pay 10x for some magical special service they're getting from, you know, OpenAI or Google or Microsoft, but the average person, like, no, like I'll take the one that's even better and is over here for 10x less, right? So that's what we're seeing, you know, across all the decentralized networks like Akash and others, is like they're significantly cheaper. And this makes perfect sense because if you think about crypto, how many GPUs were mining Ethereum, right, before the switch to proof of stake? Yeah, somebody at the decentralized AI summit, I think it was Anna, brought it up. And they're like, we looked up the numbers. There were 50 times the compute mining ETH as trained ChatGPT-4. So all we have to do is point a small fraction of the crypto GPUs at AI and we'll be at par or better, right, than the proprietary models. And I think that's what's going to happen, right? Bitcoin is the largest compute network in the world. Now you have a, you know, new set of protocols coming out that are already worth billions of dollars in market cap that are incentivizing people to point compute at this new use case. So, you know, I'm very optimistic on how that's going to go.
I am too. All we got to do is coordinate. And to your point, the only way that we can compete against the nation states is if we can get all the masses to coordinate. And if we can do that, we actually are more powerful. But, you know, nothing like incentives to an open source code to make it easy to coordinate. I'm also really happy to hear that it's going to be easy for muggles like me to be able to use this new decentralized Llama 3 just in a browser. That's awesome. Shout out to everyone who's building nice user experiences for noobs, because it's not as hard as the AI stuff, but it's also very, very important. Another follow-up question I had on this Llama 3. The other day I was using Claude, and it wouldn't do what I was telling it to do because of ethical considerations. And it was total bullshit, too. It was like trying to say that something was this ethical dilemma. I'm like, there's nothing ethically wrong here. Just like, help me rewrite this thing, please. Like, and it's like, oh, no, you're talking about someone in here without their permission. I'm like, no, I'm not. And there's nothing in here. Like, what? Is Llama 3, is a centralized Llama 3, will it have those same ethical constraints, or will it be free? Free AI.
The cool thing about the open source weights are whether or not they've perfectly, you know, de-biased it. You can see all the prompts. You can see all of the sort of the wizardry behind the curtain that's making it do one thing or another. And instantly people had retrained different versions of Llama 3 that were, you know, totally de-biased or totally uncensored or had no, you know, pre-training around the prompts or restrictions. And so if you've got open source, people can make any variation they want, right? Generally, people have said Llama 3 is a lot less censored than the previous versions, which, like, draw the comparison. Like, if I went into a library, I'm allowed to read any book. Like, I don't get a bunch of, you know, disclaimers that the contents of these books may offend me, or, you know, I could reconstitute the words in these books to say something offensive. Like, that's ridiculous, right? But if you think about it in that framework, like, they were literally inserted a librarian that was like blocking you from seeing certain things, or you couldn't see this section, you know, and people talk about the dangers. It's like, you know, all of this information's in a public library, and I can still walk in today into that public library and read all those books. This is just making that information more convenient for the average person to access at scale, right? And that's the big difference. And the thing that comes after that, though, is what I'm really interested in, which is not just information, but actions, right? And that's what I want a smart agent to do, is take actions on my behalf. And if you have Web3 tools, it can be sending transactions for me, right? It can be doing swaps for me. It can do all these smart contract interactions that maybe I don't understand today, or I don't know what the name of the contract is, or I don't know how it works, or I don't know if it's safe. I don't know if I'm going to be rugged, right? So training AI, one of the first things the Morpheus community did was create a data set called Smart Contract Rank. And it ranked every smart contract based on, was it decentralized and non-custodial, and how many transactions did it have, which is a pretty good indicator of how popular and useful it is, right? And you can feed this in as a database to the smart agent and say, hey, you know, if they ask about this, this is the most used, safest, most decentralized option for that, right? So we're going to end up with smart contract and Web3 specific smart agents that, you know, can really protect users in a way that today they're just kind of wandering through and experimenting with stuff. They don't have a lot of context. Like you said, there's some basic tools, but most people don't really know the red flags to look for, right? And so I want my dad, if he types in just, I want to stake my ETH, he doesn't know about Lido, doesn't know any of the contracts, that's okay. Right? Oh yeah, you want to stake your ETH? Okay, cool. I've set up the transaction, push this button on MetaMask, and you're done. Like, that's the user interface we have to get to. If you want a billion people to use crypto, that's what you want, right? That's how we got a billion people on the web, right? You could just show up to the web browser, tell it what you wanted to do. The search engine gave you a good result. It was pretty safe. They tried to take all the spam and crap out of there, right? And you could click on the top link and you got a good result. Like, that's where we're getting to, and we're almost there. So, you know, yeah, it's going to be really exciting to see.
Very, very cool. So I want to make sure I understand that last bit, because I think it sounded important. But basically, there's the AI, you know, it will be there to help point you in the right direction. But on top of that, there's going to be humans that are kind of putting in some guardrails saying, you know, these are the protocols that are good for staking ETH. But those humans, they're going to be incentivized to try and put in, you know, the best biases to only help the user, not just to basically protect themselves. Is that accurate?
Yeah. And I wouldn't say humans. I would say, here's an algorithm, right, with smart contract rank that is totally transparent about the values it's quantifying, right? Like, here's the value it places on if it's non-custodial. Here's the value it places, like a numerical value, on, you know, if it's built on Ethereum or something, you know, very robust. Here's the value it places on if it's already got 10 million transactions versus somebody released this thing yesterday and nobody's ever used it. Like, those are all just transparent value sets. And you could make your own, right? You could fork it and say, oh, well, I have different values. I care more about speed. I care more about, you know, quick finality than I do full decentralization, right? You could make your own. The important thing is that those algorithms are transparent and knowable and predictable and, you know, updatable by the user. And so what I want my AI to be is an extension of me, right? I want it to represent my values, my preferences. You know, it's trying to accomplish my tasks. And that's the key, is that's going to be different for literally everybody, right? And so if you just make it easy, and they can use Morpheus, they can use a smart agent, and it learns their preferences because it can store that context, right? Again, this is connected to your Web3 wallet. So you can be tossing those files into IPFS, right? Or into Filecoin or into your local storage. And when it asks that question again, it still knows your preferences. It still knows your values, what you're trying to accomplish. That's what I want to get to, right? It's the old, you know, freedom is in, the decentralization of power, and authoritarianism is like the concentration of power. I want as many people as possible to have power over their own personal AI. And I think that's really the key here. And if you believe that, everything else flows from there, right? It has to be open source. It has to be peer-to-peer. It can't be censored. It has to be permissionless. Like, all those things come out of this concept. Like, we believe people should have a personal AI, and that's how we get to a free future, right? That's the key.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that customization and personalization is going to be the key thing with that. Because I think, like, I'm a big ChatGPT user right now. I also have Morpheus installed. But when I do that, it forgets a lot of the things that I'll teach it. Like, it'll only remember things for maybe about an hour or two, and then it'll forget something that we just were chatting about and that kind of thing. So the ability to load files into IPFS, have that there, also having it learn from context with you, like, what are my preferences? What is my voice sound like whenever I want to draft up something? I think that's key. So I'm excited about that. Yeah. Now, does it, in terms of the learning process, you mentioned you can load files, like, is a lot of it contextual, like, just from interacting with it is kind of how we'll learn more of that? Or is there, like, more of a programming type thing? How does that usually work?
A lot of it's contextual, and you sort of have to think about this in different layers. Like, the foundation models are almost like the operating system. They know all the general stuff. But then you're going to end up with applications, right, which are the smart agents, right? And this might be specific to, like, a certain tool or thing that I'm trying to do. I might have, 100 different smart agents, just like you got 100 different apps on your phone at this point, right? And you each use each one of them to do something different. In fact, I think that's a lot of what's going to happen early on, is mapping the existing apps and smart contracts to smart agents. So I can talk to my apps, I can talk to my smart contracts, and they can understand what I'm trying to accomplish. A lot of what AI gives me is just understanding the intent, right? You can think of Morpheus as like a delegator agent that's just understanding your intent. Say, okay, here's what they want to do. I'm going to match it to this application. I'm going to set up this transaction. And then you go back to the human. Hey, is this what you're trying to do? Is this how much you want to send? You're sure it's Bob? Like, okay, push this button to approve. And that's the flow, right? Where people express a goal and the AI can do all the hard work of lining it up, right? Just like a degen today, you'll use an aggregator or a router and you don't have to figure out the 20 different steps that make the optimal trade, right? It could do that for you. It's that same idea, but now for everybody, because there's no technical barrier, right? You're just using normal human language to say what you want to do, I think is the big key. So you got the foundation layers, you got the smart agents, you have context, you have your local preferences, and then ultimately you have user approval.
Man, this next generation of Web3 users, they're going to have it so easy. It's not fair. How are they going to learn through the hardships that we've had to go through? But no, it's for the best. It sounds like we're finally getting to the point where we can actually make it easy and remove all that complexity that we've had to struggle with over the years, which is how it should be. Sure. Have you seen the movie Her? And are you worried about people falling in love with their AI? That was a joke question, but I do want to ask before. I want to dive into
not really a joke question, man. I think the most popular thing on the GPT store right now is AI girlfriend. So, like, apparently that's a thing. There's a big market for that. So yeah.
Why didn't we build that? Darn it. Of course. It was so obvious. So I wanted to talk about this More 20 launch you'll have coming up on May 8th. We've had so much good stuff to talk about. I know this is coming up soon. What's happening on May 8th?
The cool thing is Morpheus described a 90-day bootstrap period, right? So the fair launch started February 8th. We get to the end of that period, May 8th, and there are already a million plus tokens in circulation that people have earned from staking ETH and earning more, or writing all that code, right, for the smart contracts and for the Morpheus software. And so that gives you a good basis on May 8th when the Uniswap pool goes live on Arbitrum, that there's not just like a couple of tokens in existence, but there's already a million tokens in existence. Now, some of those are sitting in the compute bucket and that's not live yet, and some of them are sitting in the community builder bucket and that's not live yet. So about half the tokens, call it 640,000 or so, will be in the hands of capital providers or code providers. So that's really like your starting circulating number, and it keeps growing, just like it has since the first day at 14,400 tokens a day, minus a little decay rate. I think now it's down to like 14,200 a day, right? And so that's how you get to the cap of 42 million that will ever exist at the end of the 16 years, is you just apply that decay rate and it takes 16 years, you get to zero, right? And so on May 8th, what's happening is there's a protection fund in Morpheus that's 4% of the emissions. So those are sitting in a bucket, and that's like 50,000 more. Great. Take that, pair it with the yield that's been building up during the first 90 days, and that gives you your starting price, 52% of the yield paired with that 50,000 more. Great. Now we've got more and WETH the first moment, liquid to the tune of like a couple of million dollars, you know, whatever the price of ETH is at the time, right? In that bucket, but a fairly substantial liquidity. And then everybody's free to do the same, right? Day 90, you can claim your more at 12 noon UTC time. You'll be able to claim that more that you've earned, right? And you can put it in Uniswap. You can become a liquidity provider. You can sell it for ETH. You can do whatever you want, right? And conversely, other people will be able to put in, you know, WETH and buy more, right? Maybe they didn't have staked ETH or didn't want to figure out how to do that. And they just decided, oh, I'll buy it later. You'll be able to buy it on the free market. And, you know, the express intent of the Morpheus community has been to avoid a bubble at the beginning. Like, we call this the Zcash problem. Like, where Zcash launched, right? They did a cool launch, but there were only a few tokens in existence. And the price got bid up to like crazy bajillion dollars. And it's like, okay, it created this all-time high they can never get back to. Like, there's no pre-mine. There's nobody dumping. The only people that have these tokens are the ones that earn them. This is a long-term project. So, you know, the market's going to decide whatever the price is. But, you know, I hope that the bootstrap period has created enough tokens in existence to do real price discovery and for the market to balance, you know, between people that want to buy, people want to sell, and all the rest. And there's no lockups. There's, again, no pre-mine. There's no team tokens. Like, there's no like VC tranche or any of these things you see in other projects. So hopefully there'll be a natural balance that evolves between people that want to buy it in the pool, or they say, oh, it's cheaper for me to provide yield. I'll just keep staking my ETH, right? Because again, people can keep staking ETH. And, you know, the implied cost of the ETH right now is like $12. So if you think about it, like, how much did it cost me to get one more token for providing yield? The implied value is like $12 right now, right? Cool. So it may be cheaper to just keep staking ETH than to sell your ETH for more and buy it at a higher price in the pool. And so what's likely to happen is sort of there's an equilibrium that will develop. Yeah, right, where potentially more people may stake, and that'll rise the price of the implied cost of the yield to buy one more, you know, and vice versa. So it'll be really interesting to see, right? It's an experiment. People haven't done a lot of launches like these before, but it'll sort of really open things up and prove the whole model. Not only could you stake, not only could you withdraw after 7 days, but you can claim your rewards. And this is sort of this long-term sustainable thing. So it'll be really, really fascinating to see, but I don't have any predictions. I don't know what the price is going to be. You know, there's no company to, you know, organize any of this. So, yeah.
Oh, that must be very exciting. There's nothing like launching a new token out to the wild, and especially one like this, where it's a brand new whole launch mechanism. I'm also very curious to see what the market does and what the chart looks like at launch. And I'm hoping for the best, wishing you all the best there. All right, how about let's do some like speed run questions just for some specific details on the token launch so people know what to expect. What network are you guys dropping the token on?
So people will start a claim on mainnet Ethereum, and it's minted on Arbitrum, right? Because people put their Ethereum staked ETH on Ethereum, and then it's claimed on Arbitrum, and the goal is just to keep the fees low, right?
Cool. Can you, when you're doing that transaction on mainnet, can you designate a different recipient address if, like, let's say you staked from a Gnosis Safe contract?
That's a good question. I believe you can. I'll have to check the smart contracts, but that's actually a question that came up in one of the early audits, and I believe the smart contract developers updated the contract so you could do that. But I'll have to check if that's in the interface, or that might be something you have to do in the smart contract itself, like use Etherscan to interact with the functions.
I think that would be acceptable if it was not in the UI, because most of these Gnosis Safe users know how to interact with contracts or should hopefully be able to, to follow some instructions there. We don't yet have the smart agent ready to do it all for you, but we're working on that.
And there is a testing guide, I should say, live right now on Discord and got posted to X and Telegram and Farcaster. So if you do want to practice claiming your more, right, or using the Uniswap pool, those contracts are live right now. So jump on Discord, give it a try, practice, 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 right?
Awesome. Yes, very smart to test. Okay, so it's launching. The token will be on Arbitrum. What DEX are you guys adding liquidity to?
Uniswap V3.
V3, cool. Then on that note, are you guys going to spread the liquidity that you're adding evenly to infinity? Or are you going to concentrate the liquidity in any way?
So it's interesting. You can look at the details in the MRC09. And there was a whole plan put together and a ton of analysis done by the community. And the final conclusion was, hey, let's take 52% of that yield and match it to more, right, from the protection fund like it described. That creates the initial price, right? And you can go on to morelord.com, and it's got a bunch of cool analytics about what that starting price might be. And then the rest of that 48% gets put in as supporting liquidity from a zero price all the way to the starting price, right? And so there's sort of two tranches, right? One that create liquidity at the starting price, and then the other one that creates it sort of all the way down from the bottom all the way to that current starting price.
Awesome. I was wondering about that. So thanks for walking us through that. And final question on final speed round question. Actually, I have two more. So penultimate speed round question. That starting price, is that going to be calculated based on like the value of the yield? Like you were talking about earlier, around $12 based on the price of Ethereum?
Well, the yield, I was referring to a calculation if you thought about how much yield it took to buy one more. The starting price is calculated by that 52% of the total yield that's been accrued against that 50,000 more from the protection fund, right? So if I go to morelord.com right now, I can look at their analysis and see the stats. And I think it's currently calculating a starting price of $51.69 per more, right? And you can check in there sort of what their presumption is about the ETH price or, you know, the different conversions. But yeah, like $51. So what that would imply anyway is that it's likely to start higher on the Uniswap than it costs to earn via staking. So it'd be interesting to see how that equalizes over time. That may encourage more people to stake, especially now that they know they can get their rewards and sell it at a higher price. But that'll put price pressure to bring it down, or you know, the buying may increase it. It's impossible to say, right? No crystal ball, no predictions. But that's the analysis that's been done by the community.
Awesome. Thanks for walking us through that. Okay, final speed round question: how frequently? Going forward, is the newly generated yield going to be claimed and used to purchase more and provide liquidity?
Every day, because the rebase reward from Lido comes every day at 12 noon UTC. And so that moves from the contract, you can see it in the smart contracts, it moves from there and then gets placed into the AMM. And buys, again, half of that yield then goes to buy more and the other half stays as WETH and then sits on both sides as liquidity provider forever.
Pretty awesome. So there's like some expected buy pressure every day and new liquidity coming into the pool. That's pretty awesome.
Yep.
Very cool. I feel like I have a much better understanding of what to expect May 8th. So thank you for that. Luke, did you have any other questions about the May 8th launch?
Yeah. So, well, actually not about the May 8th launch, but just in general, you mentioned earlier testnet going live for compute here in about a month or so. And then compute going on, you know, after, you know, that's successful and that type of thing. What kind of hardware requirements are needed? Is it pretty hardware intensive? Is it something folks can do like with a home device, need like an ASIC or something like that? Have y'all gotten to that part?
It really depends on the model that you want to offer, right? So let's say we wanted to offer Llama 8 billion, which is only 16 gigs to run. You could probably do that on your laptop. If there's a 70 billion parameter version of Llama, you might not have enough RAM to run that locally. And it looks like there's going to be a 400 billion version of Llama. And that's definitely going to take like a more powerful rig, right? It's actually not as much compute as most people expect because as long as the model's already trained, you're really just storing it in a RAM and then, you know, running the calculations when people ask a prompt, right? And I expect that'll be a lot of the early network is not necessarily training new models, but just inferencing existing models. So I think that that barrier will be fairly low. And the reason it has to start second is sort of the logical progression that you can't pay for compute until the token exists. And so the token had to go live, and then you had a compute contract full of more that could pay compute providers and pay them out directly. One of the really cool things is you as an individual are not paying your more to the compute provider. You're just proving you have stake in the system, and you get access to the compute in proportion to your ownership. So if you held 1% of the tokens, you'd have 1% of all inference available on the Morpheus network, right? And they're getting paid again out of the block reward that's available every day to the compute providers, right? So it's this renewable resource where the compute providers are competing, you know, to provide that inference to users at the best price, and then they get paid out by the routing contract, and it never comes out of yours. I mean, if you run out of, you know, inference budget, you could pay your own more, or you could just buy some more and then add it to your staking, right? And so think of it almost like staking for inference or hodling for inference.
Very cool. Yeah, I don't think I got that part when we first talked about it. I'd assumed that I was going to pay more in order to get compute from others. But that's really cool that I can continue to hold it as long as I stay within my allocation of it.
Well, and that was one of the huge contributions that Eric Voorhees made, is he wrote a paper called the Yellowstone paper. I guess he said he was flying over Yellowstone Park when he wrote the paper, and so he named it after that. Now everybody names their papers after like big bodies of water, stuff like that. There's a Lake Travis paper. But that was his proposal. He's like, hey guys, let's not create a ton of transactions, you know, and fees. Let's figure out a way to put these into sessions, right? Where you open a session with a compute provider, and that session might last a day, a week, whatever. Whenever that session closes, those records get published to the router, and the protocol pays them out once. So you could have done hundreds of prompts. You could have done hundreds of images, but there's only one transaction fee that has to be paid on chain. That looks a lot more like Web 2, right? You use a service, it bills you once a month. It doesn't bill you every single time you use it. And I think that was sort of a stroke of genius when he proposed that, and the community was like, yeah, that's the way to do it. That's really different from anything else I've seen out there.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think that's great.
I think we've covered a lot of the good stuff. We're at right about an hour. I do want to give a shout out just because we mentioned Eric. If you didn't listen to that podcast that ATXDAO did with Eric Voorhees, also highly recommend talking about that. Talk about a lot of the same subjects. And just like, if you're not already by the end of this episode, bullish on the need to decentralize AI, then definitely recommend listening to that episode, because by the end of it, you absolutely should be, because it's very important. And we're all so grateful to have guys like David, Eric, and the whole Morpheus community fighting the good fight and trying to make this possible before it's too late. So it's been amazing to see this all come together, by the way. I want to say I got to hear it pretty early on from David when Morpheus is mostly just a white paper. And I'm like, yeah, this sounds amazing, but it's a big dream too. And then just to see the progress since then, and all these pieces come together, all these different stakeholders come together and either, you know, take what they're building and adapt it, or start from scratch to build all these pieces, has just been amazing to witness. And then to see how much ETH got staked in a couple months too, that was more than anyone was expecting. And it's just awesome to see the whole community coordinate to make this happen. So thank you for taking the time to tell us about all of this. And thank you to everyone who listened.
Yeah, absolutely. And David, we'll definitely note everything in the show notes, but just if folks want to find out more about Morpheus or connect with you, what's the best way for them to stay connected with the work and the stuff that you're doing?
MOR.org, right? So community website, and it's got tons of links to the Discord, to GitHub. Anybody wants to follow me on X, it's just at D Johnston EC. And yeah. That's about it. If you go through there, you'll find all the links, everything you need.
Well, this has been really great. I always enjoy chatting with you. Looking forward to the launch here coming up soon. And look forward to having you again back when we have some stories to hear about how things are going once it's live and the tokens out there.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. See ya.